This is Dr. James Crosby, Head of Sustainability at Advantage Utilities. I'd like to ask, could your organization be more of an energy sector hero? Are you interested in improving your sustainability as a business? Well, now you can obtain the expert view and guidance on renewable energy solutions, on-site generation, carbon accounting, and sophisticated grid energy purchasing options through Advantage Utilities. Our team of experts use the latest tools to better analyze, track, and reduce your organization's energy usage and carbon emissions. To find out how Advantage Utilities can become your one-stop shop for all your energy and sustainability needs, please visit www.advantageutilities.com or give one of our passionate and friendly team a call on 0208 131 4747.
Hi there, and welcome back to the Energy Sector Heroes podcast. My name is Michelle Fraser, and every week I will speak with incredible people who share their lessons, experiences, and stories from their time spent in the energy sector. Hi there, and welcome back again to this week's episode. If you're new to the show, then please take a second to subscribe and even consider sharing the show with just one other person. This week, I am joined by Geoffrey Whittle. Geoffrey provides 30 years legal experience to clients in the oil and gas industry and energy sector, and is also a fellow electrical engineer, which I'm quite proud of, actually. Geoffrey, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Geoffrey Whittle, as Michelle said. Thank you, Michelle. And I'm an intellectual property and technology attorney in the oil and gas and energy sector. I've been working for 30 plus years in this sector. As Michelle mentioned, I have an electrical engineering background. I used to work for Hewlett Packard back in the day. I like to joke when the dinosaurs were still roaming the earth. So it was a terrific time, and I learned a lot then as an engineer, and then went on to law school and into graduate MBA school, and have been practicing this legal field for quite a while. I do mostly deals and transactions, but I do a little bit of litigation or litigation support as well.
Okay, that sounds amazing, actually. So how did you get started in the energy sector?
Well, I guess the first kind of experience I had was early in my legal career was more on the power side of energy in general, and got exposed to metering and electrical systems, distribution systems, and the like. And so that fascinated me. My father was a nuclear engineer, so I had some background in energy, you might say, or maybe it's in my genes, I'm not really sure. But that's how I kind of got started. But I was always fascinated by the oil and gas side, the nuclear side, the solar, wind, and the power side of various utilities. But I focused mostly on the last 20 years or so on the oil and gas sector.
Okay. So what made you change from electrical engineering to move on to law?
I was fascinated by the change. What I think is exciting about the field of law is you see technology change over time, and you're able to help and serve clients to protect their technology, to license or transfer their technology, and to do deals where their technology is a significant factor. And that fascinated me, the ability to see those changes and understand what was going on in the industry over this period of time. And so I thought, you know, from engineering, I had the right background and training to become a kind of a technology lawyer of sorts or a patent lawyer, and jumped into, you know, that kind of background in education, realizing I needed the extra degrees to be able to advise clients effectively over the length of my career.
Did you find it quite easy then to change from electrical engineering into the law space?
I thought the biggest hurdle was probably my first year of law school. In my first year of law school, it was hard because I was used to the black and white answers all the time for mathematical and science. And so because the answers weren't, you know, black and white all the time, a right and wrong per se, it took me a little time to adjust. So I think the first year of my law school was the hardest time, just figuring out and understanding the legal process and how there's two sides to different coins, so to say, two sides to arguments, and then trying to set up ways to understand persuasion and how to be an advocate for a client, especially a technology client.
Okay. That sounds amazing, actually. So did you find any hurdles when transferring over from the engineering into the law? Did you find you graduated? Was it quite easy?
Well, after I graduated, I had to kind of make a decision. I want to kind of go on the business side or the legal side more. And I wanted to go on the legal. I thought because it was there was a demand for patent attorneys or demand for attorneys that understand technology. You know, there's only a certain percentage of individuals that may be on the technology side, maybe more on STEM side in terms of a background or education. And then if you add that into law school, there's even a smaller pool that go on to law school. So there is some demand for lawyers that have that technical background or engineering background or science background that are able to help serve, you know, individual clients, you know, startups, medium-sized companies, as well as big multinational companies.
Okay. Why do you think that it's important to have like an engineering background when you move into the law space?
Well, if you're moving into this particular technology space, first of all, I think engineers think really well. And so you might call me biased. So those who aren't engineers can curse me after the call if you want. But the idea is that we think of different solutions as engineers. We go through that process. And so if you think of attorneys somewhat as problem solvers, advocates and problem solvers, helping clients solve problems, it kind of fits hand in hand. But then also the technical science training, you're reading a lot of science documents, looking at technical documents of clients. And so you need to have that understanding or that know where to go look. You don't have to be necessarily expert in all areas, but you need to go understand the engineering principles, where to go look, where resources to use to try to help understand it and help advocate or help a client solve a problem.
Okay. So having an engineering background really helps then?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So did you have any role models when you were starting out in your career?
Yes, I had several role models. I remember the first law firm I went to work for. I'd probably worked for somewhere between 8 to 10 different partners, and each had their own style, and each had particular ways to mentor me. I remember one of them was a former World War II veteran, a very fascinating guy. Was a survivor of the Battle of the Bulge, World War II, and he helped mentor and train me. He was a Purple Heart winner, so to say. He had wounds from the battle, but a brilliant guy, brilliant thinker. He worked as a patent examiner for a while and also was a lawyer, and he was really brilliant. And I had the privilege of working with him. A guy named Don Seltzer, who's no longer alive, but really a real wonderful person, a big impact in my life. But all those partners that I worked with during that period of time really helped shape me and understand the knowledge and depth that I needed to take on to assignments and help clients with.
So what was the most important thing that your mentors taught you then?
I think part of it is perseverance and studying documents deeply to try to understand the technologies and the nuances in technology. Sometimes we put together things as broad strokes, and people often see them as broad strokes, but so somebody said, that's a chair and another one's a chair. Well, those chairs can be completely different in terms of their structure and how they're built. And it's the same in the oil and gas industry, formulations of chemicals, how processes work. There's significant differences. And to be able to understand how to look for those differences in those technology to help distinguish what your client is doing as compared to someone else is really what he kind of focused on. I can still remember the assignments when he would take two objects and he'd put them in the room and he'd say, okay, go back, take these with you, to your office and don't come back to me until you got a good long list of the differences between the two. And I'd come back with the differences and he would point out which ones were more significant than others. But just the exercise helped me mentally kind of train to look for differences in a way that hadn't really wasn't really significant to me prior to that type of training.
It is, that type of training is quite important, actually. I think it is as well.
Yes, it is. And it can help advance the science. And really, that's what a lot of the patent applications and patent documents and even scientific articles are efforts to advance the science. And if you can help clients distinguish those differences, explain them to people, it really does help advance the science and technology and the arts, as we often call it as well.
But is that a really hard skill to learn then?
I think it takes patience and I think it takes perseverance and consistency, but you also need somebody, a good mentor like I had, or mentors plural, that can help, you know, be patient with you consistently, have you go back and forth. There's a lot of back and forth in that process till they start to, the light bulbs go on or the things start to click in the mind of the trainee and, you know, our mentee. And once you're kind of trained, you see things differently. It's really kind of a neat or interesting or fun thing to be able to look at things and see differences quickly. But it takes some time. And I like to tell people it takes sometimes between 2 or 3 years of mentoring and training until they're really, it comes second nature to be able to pick up those differences.
Okay. So what is the one skill you would say that you would need to be able to pick up differences?
I think it's probably being a detailed person, looking for details and trying to think through things in detail. And I think the engineering training, you know, to your point earlier, Michelle, helps in a significant way, because I think we're used to paying attention to details a little bit with those type of scientific and engineering training. Because as you know, if you connect a circuit in the wrong spot, or you put a formulation that's the wrong formulation, and you're not paying attention to detail and process steps, things can go wrong and go wrong badly. So you know, being able to pay attention to those details and persevering through that learning process can be really helpful. So if you're a detailed person and like details, I think you could be very successful here too.
I think so too, actually. I think as an engineer that you have to be a detailed person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think so, especially if you're working on the design and things like that.
That's correct.
So what is the most challenging thing about your current role and how do you handle it?
I think it's the probably time pressure. Sometimes there's deadlines on things. So having deadlines and having multiple deadlines, because you're dealing with a lot of different clients or a lot of different projects, you're trying to multitask in some ways, not totally, but more like Gantt chart multitasking. You're doing one task where you have to do another to keep processes on schedule. So it's a little bit of project management. So I think that's probably one of the most challenging things. And you're managing, you know, projects, and you're managing people, and you're managing relationships with clients. So that kind of combination can make it challenging and stressful at times, but also can be very rewarding when there's success on the other side and you see clients satisfied or success in achieving certain goals and things like that.
Okay. I agree. I totally agree with that as well. So if you were going to hire a graduate, what kind of skills do you look for?
If they're an engineering graduate, we actually do train engineers, you know, to be patent agents or technical advisors. And then even if they want to go to law school, we encourage them to go to law school and get training for that. So we're looking for people that are detailed and diligent, hard workers, you know, people that want to, you know, build their career, you know, over time, not just to come in to do a job, so to say, is what we kind of look for. We look for coming out of law school, we look for, you know, high achievers and those that have technical backgrounds, those that want to, you know, want to do well. And part of the reason is because those are ones that are often driven to go through that mentoring, persevere through that mentoring, because they can see the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit, so to say. And so we're looking for people that are willing to be trained and teachable and willing to go through that process to be mentored. Because once they get through those 2 or 3 years, it's like not smooth sailing, but they kind of get it. Everything clicks and they work really well and most of them really, really enjoy it.
Okay, but then if you're working as a technical advisor, wouldn't every case or project that you would be working on would be totally different from the next one, though, the previous one?
That's correct. They will be different, but the projects, like it, we tend to pick, you know, for oil and gas and energy, for oil and gas, we tend to pick people that have more, you know, mechanical engineering or mechanical or electrical engineering that are more electromechanical in nature, you might say. They kind of understand a lot of the mechanics in addition to the chemistry or the electronics or electrical, you know, computers, how they operate. So we look for people that kind of have that understanding a little bit for that. So it usually works out well. You know, if they're a technical advisor, they can be an undergraduate, they can be a master's or a PhD. We hire all those levels and we just help them train and see, you know, understand the technology that they're working on, flip to another project. Another project usually is related. In other words, it's not necessarily going to be, you know, out of a whole different mold. It'll be something related. It could be for a different client, different technology, but it might be one instance. It might be, you know, an upstream wellbore, so to say. And next, it might be a top surface pump or something like that. But both have a kind of mechanical nature to them and structure. And their technical skills help them understand how those things operate and how they can help the client. They will have mentors and training that also can help the client too. So they're not, you know, thrown out to see by themselves, so to say. But we train them to be able to analyze and help in that sense.
So what kind of training do you provide them then?
It's we send them through courses. We help them with writing. We help them with understanding the patent process. We help them understand what clients are trying to achieve. And so we have both, you know, formal courses, we have informal mentoring, we have in office kind of training and courses that they go through and kind of coach them through that process, help train them. It takes a little time, but we do invest in people and are looking for people with good talent like that.
It sounds amazing, actually. Sounds amazing. So have you ever had any career disasters?
I don't know what qualifies a disaster. I can think I had different challenges in careers. I don't know what qualifies a disaster. You know, that in terms of changing from one company to another, one law firm to another, not really. No, you know, those changes occurred probably because I wasn't satisfied and I was looking for something better or trying to move up in the organization or the like. So it's probably more along those lines. Have I had challenging situations that are disruptive? Yes. I can remember as a lawyer, I was falsely accused one time I wasn't accused by my client. I was actually accused by the other side of not keeping my duty to them. And I had no duty to that other side. My duty to was my client, and the other side got upset because my client was having good results and they were frustrated. So they attacked me instead of the client. They actually attacked both my client and me, but that was resolved and favorably for me. But that was a challenge at the time. Kind of surprised me. It took me, you know, off my guard a little bit, so to say. I never had seen anybody quite do it like that before, where they challenge the attorney instead of the client I represent, per se.
Okay, but that must be really challenging actually to deal with. How did you actually deal with that?
Well, it was hard. They filed a complaint with the State Bar Association and things like that. And I had to notify our insurance carrier and went through that process, you know, with an insurance attorney, hired attorney. But what I learned, I think, from the process is to have a little more thick skin in the process, because that client really just wanted money at some stage and we weren't willing to give it. But I think that's what the client was trying to, the other side was trying to save face and wanted money. And they figured that that's where they could get a source of it. And they were wrong, of course, but for me, because it came out of left field, I had to learn to have a little bit of thick skin about that. And I think the attorney kind of coached me in that process, that here's where they're coming from. And we don't agree, obviously, because you had no duty to them. But, you know, just persevere through this process. Let's let it play out. Have a little bit thick skin in the process. And that's what I learned. And it really, in some ways, toughened me, you might say. So, as you can imagine, some kind of challenge like that against your personal integrity and the like, it kind of toughened me to also be more perceptive to other parties and stuff like that, where they're coming from, to try to dissuade them from taking rash actions like that too against anybody. So that was all positive.
I was going to say, and I do agree with you about the tough skin, but do you think that in order to survive in business that you do need a tough skin?
I think you do. I think, you know, some people say business is business and you do have to have tough skin for people like that, for sure. I think there's you can get a lot of enjoyment out of it. I'm not saying that it's not enjoyable. I think it is. And I think it's an opportunity to do some terrific things, both on the technology side and also the service side, and really, you know, improve people's lives and improve, you know, the world, so to say. I think the privilege and blessing of the oil and gas industry and the energy industry as a whole has done that in so many ways, again and again, you know, from the resources and people's talents and quite frankly, they're brilliant. You know, they got some really bright minds through that process. I think and through that process, the competitive nature of business is going to cause you to have some thick skin. But I think persevering through that and being consistent helps you succeed in many ways.
Yeah, I do think that. But how do you get thick-skinned or toughen up? Do you have any advice? Because it is hard, actually, to get to that point.
I think it's a little bit as putting in the dues, so to say, in your career. Sometimes you have to go through different processes and be exposed to different types of bosses, so to say, people that have within the company and outside the company. And I think that exposure is just to be patient and go through it and see how people treat each other sometimes and how business works sometimes, to toughen it a little bit. Remember, I often teach or talk about negotiations and stuff. I often say it can be as hard to pull together your negotiation teams inside your company as it is outside the company to do the negotiations, because you can have so many different personalities and so many different types of talents that you might need for a project. You have to be able to negotiate with that. And doing that internal, you know, kind of work and putting your dues and try to learn people and understand people, I think toughens you and helps you to negotiate better even on the outside, because you know what your team and they're capable of doing is as compared to the other side. And then I think you just have to be exposed to it over time. I don't have any silver bullets other than that, just a little bit of exposure to it.
I do. I think it's quite hard to achieve, actually. I think it comes with experience as well.
Yeah.
What keeps you motivated when times get tough?
What motivates me, I think, is the opportunity to serve others and see the successes. Sometime in our business, as you know, it can be a little bit of a long game. You're working on a technology or development or trying to help a client, just remembering the long game and just remind yourself of the past successes you've had, and you know that this can succeed as well, keeps me going. I get a lot of intrinsic satisfaction in terms of seeing clients delighted at the results. So that's a positive thing. When things work and things work well, or they get the results they want, it's a lot of fun. So that's what keeps me motivated, and ability to serve clients in that way is a real joy at times.
And that is excellent advice as well. What do you enjoy most about your current role?
Well, I'm now in a role of more leadership, and what I enjoy now is strategy and planning. So I like to help develop strategy and keep a team focused on the vision and what we're trying to achieve. So I do that, and that's really rewarding, and that's what I like to do. And it's really a lot of fun to think through things strategically. We want to go from here to here to here. How do we do that? What resources do we need? What people do we need? How are we going to achieve that to grow things? And I like to call myself a builder, so I like to call it the hope of the build. So I like to try to create a vision where we're going and what we're going to build to help excite the team to help achieve the goals.
I think that's amazing advice. But what is the difference between what you're doing now as in more strategic and developing strategy than what you were doing when you were an electrical engineer?
Well, I would say that when I was an electrical engineer, I was working more on the kind of field engineer side, and I was helping others design platforms, design teams in some way to help their products succeed. It was more individualistic, I would say. And I would say even early in my career after law school was a little more individualistic. I think what now I'm doing is more creating a team atmosphere, growing things as a team and a group. And I think that's the biggest difference. I think early in my career it was hard to take my eyes off what was right in front of me all the time instead of looking at the big picture. And I think now it's easier for me to see the big picture. I think early in my career, I couldn't see the forest sometimes for the trees, but now it's much easier for me to see forests.
Do you think so?
I do.
Do you think that's quite hard to do, though?
Yeah, I think it is, because I think we have to step back. You know, sometimes early in our careers, I think we're more working on a segment of a project, and we're focused just on that project, or focused just on that segment. Sometimes we might understand the projects, but other times we might understand what the goal of the project, or what's its goal in helping somebody achieve something. And even in a legal, you know, if you're a patent attorney, you may say, I just want to work on this one patent. I'm working on this patent. But the goal might be building a platform of 10 or 12 or 15 patents. And then another goal might be, even a bigger force might be helping the client raise investment capital to help commercialize the product that the patent's protecting, or help build a facility or a plant that it's protecting. And so there's these elements of bigger picture things. And if you understand, you know, the bigger picture, sometimes it understands why that small individual thing is so important. But that's hard early in your career to see all the segments, the backside, that how this can make a real contribution. You know, build a facility, create jobs, create employment, create, you know, economic benefit for a community or whatever the case is.
Excellent advice. I just wondered, what is your zone of genius? What are you most excellent at?
That's an interesting question. My zone of genius. I'm going to say strategy. I'm going to go with strategy. Early in my career, still an engineer, I read a strategy book and I had really trouble understanding it. But I kind of persevered and looked and studied strategy. And that book, somebody asked me, one of the most influential, not the most influential, but one of them was probably that strategy book, because that's the first time it got me started thinking about strategy. And so I would say helping look at strategic goals and help them achieve strategic goals is probably my sweet spot or my zone of genius. I don't know that I'm a genius, but I would say definitely my sweet spot.
And that is a good skill to have as well. Amazing. So I was going to ask you, so do you have any career advice for a younger audience that's wanting to come into the energy sector?
I would say that it is a wonderful time to enter the energy sector. I cannot remember a better time in my lifetime. And the reason I say that is because energy is such a global issue right now. It's exciting to see the change going on out there. Some people call it the energy transition, but I heard someone recently call it the energy expansion. And I think that's actually a better terminology for it, which is that you're expanding all kinds of options in energy. And you're not getting rid of oil and gas. You're not getting rid of other energy options. You're just expanding what the set is. The world's population is growing and our demands for energy are increasing. So you have to have these options, and they all have different roles to play and significant roles to play. So I would strongly encourage them to pursue a career in energy, because I think it's such a fun time to see change. Look how much people are talking about it. Even, you know, companies that you would think are not a energy company, like an Amazon, for example, spends a huge amount of time on energy. And if you look at their literature, they talk about their investment in energy. And you're thinking, this is a retail company, basically. But the energy is big for them. It's big for, you know, everybody. And so it's a really fun time to be there. And I think the other issue, it's multi-generational, right? A lot of the things we're doing is multi-generational. We're trying to achieve goals on of less carbon emissions over time. I mean, it's going to be in other people's lifetimes as well. So it's really, I'd really just encourage young people to pursue careers in energy for that reason. It's really a fun, and it's going to be on the hot seat in the economically for a long period of time.
I agree as well. I've never heard it called the energy expansion before, actually. That's quite a new and unique way of wording it, actually. I was going to wrap things up. I had one more question. If you could turn back time, would you change anything?
Oh, yeah, I'd probably, jokingly, try not to age quite as much. but I think over time it's really important. What I've learned is to take good care of your health and take time for yourself, you know, to mentally regroup and refocus. Those are things I would encourage young people to think about. Play the long game on those issues, right? Build your career over time and play the long game. So take care of yourself. But, you know, there's times I wish I would take better care of myself. I think I'm in good health. I don't mean it like that at all, but I would even say there's things I could have done that I do now that I wish I did when I was younger, probably. So that's probably what I would say, physically speaking. Change in my career side, it's hard to say. I wish I probably got to Houston faster, because there's so much dynamic change in energy, and this is a real hotbed for it. There's other hotbeds too, but I wish I got here a little faster. Probably that would probably be another thing. If I could change, I could hear, you know, 5-10 years earlier.
Okay, and that is amazing advice, actually. So that's all the questions I have today. I would like to thank Jeffrey for your time. that brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening and see you next week.
Thank you, Michelle.
That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, I'd like to gently encourage you to leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with another person. You can also follow me on LinkedIn or via my website, www.michellefraserconsultancy.com. Thanks again for listening and see you next week.